When people try to define Detroit's musical brand, they may automatically think of something like this. Then again, maybe something like this. But it's pretty unlikely they would think of music like this.
You're not the first girl who thought you broke my heart, and you probably won't be.
That is Detroit-based country star Lonnie Barron. And yes, you did hear that right, Detroit-based country. In the middle of the 20th century, the city was home to a thriving country music scene. This little-known music history of the Motor City is chronicled in the book Detroit Country Music, Mountaineers, Cowboys, and Rockabillies. Current state's Emmanuel Berry spoke with the book's author, Craig Mackey. He co-researched the work with Keith Cady. Craig had trouble defining the sound of Detroit country music. It varied greatly by artist and year, but one common factor he did point out was that the recordings were raw and loud.
One of the things that comes down to us today are the recordings that were made during those decades, and many of them were done live in the studio and without the benefits of producers who could ask a musician to play a certain way to get a different sound. Basically, the bands played like they did in the bars that they played. So there were a lot of very loud, energetic records made in the studios back then.
So how did there end up being such a strong country music scene during this time period in Detroit?
I think the answer to that is with the auto companies. They were offering low-skilled jobs like crazy, and when things weren't going well in the South, a lot of people came north to get jobs in Detroit. And sometimes if one member of a family could get into a plant, they would send for the rest of their families to come, and a lot of smaller communities from rural areas relocated into Southeast Michigan's cities, such as Detroit, Pontiac, Flint, and so on.
Craig, the artists that you cover in the book, they're really some characters, like Chief Redbird, who yeah. sent traditional Native American headdresses to every president. How did the chief end up in Detroit?
He lived a fascinating life, in my opinion. Born in Oklahoma Territory in 1899, he was a member of the first cowboy string band to broadcast on radio in Oklahoma. When he joined Billy McGinty's Oklahoma Cowboys, someone named Otto Gray was running the band by that time. And Gray seemed pretty ambitious. He got them onto vaudeville circuits, and they were playing radio stations across the Midwest and the Northeast. When Chief Redbird signed with NBC Artist Management in the early 30s, they wound up sending him to Cleveland for a while, and then he eventually moved the group to Detroit. I believe that Redbird got into tool and die making. That was his day job in Detroit through the 40s while he entertained at night. So I guess both the musical and the opportunity to make money during the day and have a decent living made Detroit quite attractive to many musicians.
Another pair of artists that really stood out in the book were the York Brothers. It's Leslie and George, and their 1939 track, Hamtramck Mama, was a big hit. But it was also a bit of a controversy, so much so that the mayor at the time, he tried to ban the song. First off, what's going on in Hamtramck at the time that it has that kind of reputation that a song would even be written about it?
During Prohibition, Hamtramck was a place that was sort of wide open to bootlegging and all kinds of craziness. I guess the reputation followed it or lasted from the 20s through 39 or so when Leslie York wrote the song. Hamtramck had a pretty wild reputation during those years.
Talk about your truckin' mama, boys, I've got one. She's a Hamtramck baby and she has her fun. She's a Hamtramck mama, and she sure does know her stuff. She's the hottest thing in town. Oh, Lordy, how she can love. She does the boogie and the
York Brothers came to Detroit around 38 or 39, and they were playing two acoustic guitars. Leslie played lead, and George played rhythm. And their music had a lot of blues to it. In fact, some of the records are printed with hillbilly blues on the labels.
Hmm.
The Delmore Brothers were also a very popular brother duo at the time, and they sang a lot of blues, but their records were more refined than the York Brothers. The York Brothers, when they got into the studio, they just let it all hang out, and there's some whooping and hollering and some distorted electric guitars going on. Once they got a bass player in there, got even more rambunctious on some of their records, and they recorded 20-some records just in Detroit before they joined the Navy in 44. They were really, from what I could tell from our interviews, and people who remember them, they were very popular in Detroit, probably one of the most popular acts when they were around.
What about female artists? Were there any ladies at the time who were big on the Detroit scene?
In the 50s, there was a singer named May Hawks who came up from Tennessee. She married a man who was working in a factory, and she lived in Troy. May Hawks was a great talent.
Sweetheart, I'm tired of roaming and I want to settle down. I'm tired of gallivanting and painting up the town. I'm tired of all the other guys, my darling, you were right. So meet me down in Nashville at the Opry tonight.
Before she wound up in singing in Detroit, she was, she started singing in Saginaw with Casey Clark and Little Jimmy Dickens at a station in 47 or 48. And when Dickens went from there to Nashville, he found out that the radio station WSM that hosts the Grand Ole Opry was looking for someone to sing as the embodiment of Little Miss Martha White. So she spent a couple years down there singing on the radio at WSM and on the Grand Ole Opry before she came back to Detroit and spent probably about 15 years singing around town.
Detroit is known as a city of music. Do you hope that this book helps to extend that brand of music for Detroit to include country?
One of the objectives that I had in putting this together was to encourage people who are interested in this music. I know that when I first started doing this research, I was playing music myself on the side, and I was it was real inspirational for me to sit and jam with some of these musicians we spoke with and learn things from them. And I hope that some people can read this and say, hey, you know, this did go on here, and maybe it still does. Like, actually, it does. It still does. And I'm hoping that people can look through the book and learn a few things about local history and also maybe be inspired by the stories.
Craig Mackey is a writer, musician, researcher, and radio host. His book, which he co-researched with Keith Cady, is Detroit Country Music, Mountaineers, Cowboys, and Rockabillies. Craig, thanks so much for your time.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Thank you very much.
Making believe.
For Current State, I'm Emmanuel Berry.
That you still love me. It's leaving me alone and so blue. But I'll always dream. Still, I'll never own you.
That's Detroit-based country artist Jimmy Work, and the track is called Making Believe.